The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Hello, I'm Ollie Mann, and this is Tech Weekly.
Today, we're announcing Apple Music, the next chapter in music. It will change the way that you experience music forever.
Yes, Apple have finally announced their big plans to break into the streaming industry and, as you've heard, claim to change the way we experience music forever. Although I'm pretty sure they said something similar when they launched Ping. Short of cracking open your head and rewiring your internal auditory system, exactly how will Apple's streaming plans truly change the way that you enjoy music? Well, this week we'll be biting into Apple Music, more puns later, with Guardian music journalist Seppo Mokoena, the tech team's Alex Hearn, and our digital streaming expert Stuart Dredge. And I'll be joined by the controller of Radio 1, Ben Cooper, who'll be telling us how he feels about Apple's new radio station Beats 1 stealing some of his top talent. This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian. Apple announced their plans to enter the streaming market at their Worldwide Developers Conference in San Francisco. That's WWDC for the initiated, or hashtag WWDC for the irritating. With all the imaginative power that it took them to come up with the name Apple Watch, they've christened the new service Apple Music, and it's built by the team behind the Beats Music service that Apple bought as part of Beats Electronics last year. Dr. Dre wasn't at the launch. Can't believe they forgot about Dre. But here's what the Beats co-founder Jimmy Iovine had to say when he took to the stage.
2015, music industry is a fragmented mess. If you want to stream music, you can go over here. If you want to stream some video, you can check some of these places out. If you want to follow some artist, there's more confusion for that. So I reached out to Tim Cook and Eddie Q, and I said, guys, can we build a bigger and better ecosystem with the elegance and simplicity that only Apple can do? One complete thought around music. And I'm going to introduce you to Apple Music.
There you go. Who knew he didn't even mention the word Spotify when he came up with the idea? Well, The Guardian's Stuart Dredge was there in the audience. He joins us via Skype now. Stuart, there was a lot of whooping there. Were you whooping?
I'm afraid not. I think the thing most journalists do at an Apple event is you type really fast and you swear a lot when the Wi-Fi goes down. So I was doing both those things, really. But there were a lot of whoopers around me.
There always are at Apple events. The fanboys, I guess, always are going to be very easily pleased. What about everyone else? There was a lot here that was very, very highly trailed in advance, I think it's fair to say.
There was, yeah. It's the usual Apple thing. Well, whenever there's an Apple event, there's lots of leaks anyway. And the music industry is notoriously leaky. So for the weeks leading up to it, you had tech sites giving details. You had music industry sites giving details. So yeah, it was a lot of it was leaked. There were a few surprises.
What were the surprises? And actually, what was announced before we start picking it apart?
Yes, no, that's a good one. Well, yeah, so they announced Apple Music, which is partly they're moving to Spotify-style streaming. But there's kind of three main planks to it. So the first is this big catalogue of music to stream as you like and browse playlists and tastemakers, which is very much like Spotify. The second bit is this live radio station called Beats One, which they poached Zane Lowe for, and it'll broadcast round the clock and you'll stream it over the internet to your phone or computer. And then the third thing was this thing called Apple Connect, which is kind of Facebook meets YouTube meets SoundCloud, in that musicians can kind of upload their music, their videos, their photos, post status updates for all the fans that follow them. And that sits sort of within their profile on the service. So all this was announced, and it's all going live at the end of June on iOS devices and computers, but then later this year on Android, which is kind of quite an unusual move for Apple to take.
And Alex Hearn, what do you think Apple's final ambition actually is? People have been saying already this is just a stepping stone towards the final version of Apple TV, which will be the Netflix killer.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly going to be the case. Apple, by all accounts, Apple was desperately trying to get that out the door before WWDC as well, and they couldn't, because if there's one group that's harder to corral than record labels, it apparently is TV channels. But the thing about Apple still, even after launching a £10 a month music subscription service, is that they fundamentally make their money from hardware. Their end game is only to do all of these deals and haul all of that content into the ecosystem to sell more iPhones, iPads, Apple Watches, and Apple TVs. They make an astronomical amount of money from doing that, and everything else still really, in terms of profit, is a bit of a rounding error.
And Seppo Mokoena, is this the final nail in the coffin for owning music? You know, the direction of travel very clearly for the past few years has been people are prepared to stream or rent or do anything with it apart from actually pay for it and own it. Now Apple have got on board and they are, or perhaps were, the biggest ownership of music site in the world, the biggest place where you could buy music, and they're saying stream it as well. Is that it? Has that model gone?
I mean, I think it's interesting that, as you say, because they were pioneers in the kind of download and have this to own field, that they've pivoted away and been like, ooh, maybe we should just follow what Pandora and Spotify have been doing. I mean, essentially, it still feels a little same old, same old. I mean, yes, we're moving away from the ownership of physical product, but the record labels are still sitting at the center of this. Like, ultimately, for artists, Apple Music, Spotify, Tidal, they're all still paying the money that they generate into record labels and into publishing companies. So still, independent artists are in the same situation where they're not making that much money. Unsigned artists are completely screwed. Like, it's, to me, it doesn't feel like much of a sea change at all. It's just Apple jumping into a pool which is going to be good for them to make a little bit of extra money and combine hardware and software in the way that they always have.
One stat that I love that I think Stuart gave me, so I'll just steal his interesting tidbits, is that Spotify overall has spent something like $125 per paying user. That Spotify right now is really just a massive tool for funneling venture capital money through a tech company into the pockets of record labels. That, as it turns out, is the solution to piracy. Get very rich Californians to pay for the music that everyone else used to steal.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point, isn't it, Stuart? Spotify actually reported a loss of 165 million euros last year. If Google and Apple and Amazon, all of whom have more money than Spotify, are simply prepared to lose that amount every year, then they'll win, even if they haven't got the best product.
Well, that, yes and no. I mean, you can certainly look at that. And I actually interviewed Dan Leck from Spotify and said this, and he was saying, well, we only do music and that's our advantage. And I was like, but they sell loads of phones and they can suck up these costs. At the same time, this has happened before. People said that when Apple launched iCloud, it would kill Dropbox, and it didn't. When they said it launched iTunes Radio, it would kill Pandora, and it didn't. So there is this kind of history of assuming that the big player will beat the kind of the smaller guy, and it doesn't always happen. But yeah, the economics of this are really tough for a company like Spotify. You haven't got, as in Apple's case, hardware sales, and as in Google's case, a massive advertising business to fall back on. So that's, they have to be smarter than these people and find their way to make the economics work, which is challenging but interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Seppo, as a music fan, you know, you may not appreciate what Spotify do in terms of paying artists, but as a music fan, you're going to have quite a lot of brand loyalty to Spotify now, aren't you? They've been with you for whatever it is, 4 or 5 years. Do you think, in a sense, what Stuart says is right there, and this could be a bit like when Google Plus came along, and actually everyone on Facebook just shrugged their shoulders and was like, oh, whatever, my friends are here. You think actually there's a possibility people might say, oh, I actually quite like Spotify.
I mean, I think people who don't pay for Spotify maybe will be the ones least likely to want to move towards Apple Music, because otherwise Apple are just banking on the fact that they're in your pocket and that they're on your desk and that they're just embedded into your lives elsewhere, and that on the 30th of June when you turn on your device, you're going to have this thing there that's going to be free for 3 months, and I think you're going to have to, you know, decide whether you want to activate it later or whatever, but it'll be so much easier just to pull people away because you're going to have these devices. So I think if you're like a maybe like a 15-year-old who has a free Spotify account and doesn't make any money, then maybe you're likely to stay. But I don't know, I just feel like Apple are gonna come through and just destroy. I mean, they're gonna ruin Tidal. They're gonna at least apply pressure on Spotify in terms of what music fans will like, because the two interfaces look really similar. The playlists are curated by, you know, Pitchfork and the Fader, and they've got this kind of buy-in from the music industry itself that doesn't feel like what Spotify has, because you keep seeing people like Taylor Swift and, you know, Tom York speaking out against Spotify, whereas Apple Music feels like it's in bed with everyone.
I mean, also along with that sense of curation is, I suppose, an idea of ignoring algorithms. I mean, Alex, do you think this means algorithms don't work? That the future of music online is by saying to people, curate me a playlist?
So I've actually had a lot of very interesting conversations with a couple of people who I know through their startup, This Is My Jam, which began as a Skunkworks project at the music data service, the Echo Nest, which is now owned by Spotify.
I didn't understand any of the words in that sentence.
Basically, two very smart people who work in this crossover between music and technology, Matt Ogle and Hannah Donovan, and they've argued forcefully that the answer lies somewhere in the middle. It's not just about curation, because curation, and they said this to me just after Beats launched its curated playlists, curation is expensive and curation can never be as niche as you want it to be. There will always be some niche which is too small for any player to look at. Might just be you, might be you and your 10 friends or whatever. But at the other end, algorithms don't understand taste. And the big problem is that algorithms need some source data to go on. So what they came up with is basically the idea that rather than using algorithms to churn out some approximation to taste based on sort of what Pandora does, which is ranking all of these things with their genre tags and their sound tags, you do the very simple thing of asking people what they like and actually just taking that as the basic information, not trying to do magic by reading music, just trying to take what people say they like as the root information of all of your curation. And that also has, of course, the interesting quirk that what people say they like isn't necessarily what they listen to. But what people say they like might be the more important thing. You know, if you want a cool playlist, you don't want the trashy pop that people listen to in their bedroom. You want that one song that they go, yeah, this says everything about me.
One important point about Spotify, I think, that might be their advantage is, if I think about what Apple knows about my music taste, it knows I bought the Beyonce album, the Taylor Swift album, and it knows I deleted the U2 album. And that's literally my only interface with iTunes in the last 5 years. But Spotify knows everything I've listened to in that 5 years. And the whole thrust of their new stuff is, we know what you've been listening to. We're going to recommend you, not just music, but we're going to recommend you people. So they're going to try and match me based on my taste to other tastemakers. So if there's someone out there who's doing a playlist that it thinks I would love, Spotify's got more in its armory to understand me than Apple has.
How much of that is just that you use Spotify? Because for me, that's the exact opposite. Spotify knows nothing about me, and Apple, I think, given the information they take from my computer, still knows everything I've listened to.
Possibly so. I mean, the other thing I think is that the big picture here is that it's not really about poaching one of those users. I think that there's like hundreds of millions of music fans who don't use Spotify or Apple. And that's why I think both companies are talking about radio quite a lot. And they're trying to get more like radio because that's where they see the massive number of people who don't use them already. They want to get people who are listening to radio who are mainstream music fans and bring them into the world. So I think actually, although we'll probably talk about will Apple kill Spotify, will it poach all the users, I reckon the bigger question is which of them can get to that mainstream market. I think like Seppo was saying, Apple's got a big advantage in brand, but if Spotify can be smart, it could be a really good battle.
Okay, so we've talked about what this means for the end user and we've talked about what it means for the tech industry, but what does it mean for the music industry? Well, one of the key commitments that Apple are making is a dedication to the artist. And that's all artists, by the way, not just Prince. That's a 90s joke. Streaming services like Spotify have come under fire in the past from musicians because the amount of money they receive per stream is so piddly. What will Apple's plan mean for them? Well, joining me now is Johnny Brocklehurst, who's the head of marketing and sales at Because Music, who represent artists like Mr. Wazo, Conan Moccasin, and Charlotte Gainsbourg, and lots of others who were far too cool for me to recognise from the website. Johnny, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Successful recording artists used to be able to live on the proceeds of their recordings without worrying about playing live, without worrying about even merchandising. Are those days firmly over now?
I don't think those days are firmly over necessarily, but I think the landscape has changed somewhat. And there is so many ways that people ingest music now. And therefore, I think artists need to cater for their audience in a different way.
So that sounds a bit to me like you're saying for most artists, really, you have to play live to make money.
No, I don't think that is the case necessarily. I mean, obviously, it is a massive revenue stream for a lot of artists these days. I just think it's important to have your music available in every way possible, just purely because, you know, there aren't necessarily as many people who, you know, go to record shops and buy, say, 10 CDs a year. I mean, there's some people that don't go to record shops at all. There's some people that now don't even open their iTunes anymore. They just, you know, get everything from Spotify, or perhaps just watch everything on YouTube. And so I think as an artist, you need to realise that audiences, you know, I guess, ingest music in a very kind of different way, and therefore if you think that you can, you know, just release a record, you know, it might be the most amazing music in the world, but sadly you might miss the mark if you don't make it available in as many ways as possible.
Okay, you've got the current number one highest stream track in the world at the moment, Lean On by Major Lazer.
Yes, indeed.
Congratulations, first of all.
Thank you very much.
But second of all, what kind of money does that make? What are the facts about what you get paid per stream, and how does that compete with what you might have got in the past for selling bits of shiny plastic?
I think for most people, it roughly works out at about 100 streams equates about 60p. So that's the kind of way to look at it. That's the way to look at it in regards to the chart. So if you get 100 streams, that would be the equivalent of one download. So one download is roughly about 70p, 100 streams is roughly about 60p.
And Seppo, there's been some controversy, hasn't there, about this free trial that Apple are offering of Apple Music. 3 months free for the listener sounds great, but there's been some controversy amongst the record labels.
Yeah, I mean, from my understanding, and I think there still hasn't been an official word from Apple on this, but they also haven't directly said no to the idea that for those 3 months when people are able to listen to it for free, and that's really great for them, labels and publishing companies and, you know, songwriters and owners of the copyright, essentially, of all that music will not be getting paid for those 3 months. And I'd just be really curious to know, from the perspective of someone at a label, like what that would mean for artists, whether it feels as though it's worth it to have those 3 months of kind of visibility for your artists and that sort of thing to have them on the platform, or whether labels will be coming back and trying to fight against this idea of 0% for 3 months.
I think from a label's point of view, I think that we don't see it as a kind of as a conversation closed. I think Apple Music for everybody is going to be a huge opportunity, and it's really great to have somebody with the scope of Apple entering the streaming world and, you know, allowing artists an opportunity. I mean, obviously everybody needs to get paid fairly for their music, and I think that there's, you know, I don't think that anyone for any minute is hoping that they're not going to be getting any money in regards to streams. So I think that it's not, you know, I think that there's going to be a lot more conversations had, and I don't think it's the final word on it at all.
Okay, so it sounds like you're going to try and negotiate for some money for that initial 3 month period. If you don't succeed, and not just you, but the other sort of smaller labels as well, does that mean pulling your content off of Apple during those 3 months? What is your negotiation stance?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of kind of back and forth, but I think a lot of people, and the hard and fast rule of it, with, you know, is purely that everyone needs to be paid fairly and everyone needs to be given something back. And if that isn't the case, then, you know, I mean, you wouldn't expect to go into a shop and pay nothing and get a CD. So, and those rules shouldn't change for streaming. So if something can't be agreed, then I think there is probably going to be some stonewalling involved and content potentially not being up there.
And Johnny, just final question on this. When we were talking off mic before you came on, Seppo said, I thought I'd drop her in it because I wasn't sure she'd say it to you. She said, what is the future for the labels at all? What's the point of them, basically, as we move forward? People might be able to upload their own music to Apple and the like. What is your answer to that criticism?
I think that working with record labels should always be a collaborative process. And I think at the end of the day, the best way to look at it is when you sign with a record label, you have somebody else, you know, fighting the call, somebody else who is speaking to all these digital service providers. You know, you do need somebody with ideally expertise speaking to Spotify, speaking to iTunes, and, you know, speaking to radio. And you want somebody fighting your calls the best way possible, and that should be a collaborative relationship as far as a record label goes.
All right, well, good luck with all of your negotiations, Johnny, and thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Well, Seppo, are you convinced? Do you think there is a future for the record labels, really?
I mean, I think indie labels, like Because, are slightly different from the three majors that we have left, but it would just be great if those major labels could find a way to negotiate contracts with their actual artists that enable them to get paid a lot more. Like that 70% that Spotify and Apple Music and Tidal are paying to labels and publishers, they should be getting a bigger cut of that ultimately, because there isn't the cost of, you know, actually pressing vinyl or getting CDs out, and they're still taking those similar kind of cuts that they would have taken 30 years ago when there was a physical product. So if they just like update and come up to terms with the fact that we're in a digital age, then that's cool, then they can still exist. Otherwise, we've got to find another way to work this out.
And it's not just a threat to the labels, it's also a threat to the radio industry. We'll be hearing more about that next.
Music.
Guardian listeners get the latest news, but they can also create it. With our sponsor Squarespace, you can easily create an elegant website for your personal brand, online store, business, personal portfolio, or blog. Whoever you are, Squarespace's simple tools and elegant designs make your ideas newsworthy and accessible to any audience. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Now, Apple Music isn't just about music on demand, it's also about the launch of Beats One, a global radio station broadcasting from London, New York, and LA. One of the stars they've brought on board as the face of the station is a voice you might just recognize.
When Apple first asked me to be involved in this, they told us to put the great music in front of the average, the unexpected, the undiscovered, the anticipated, the underrated. We have real music fans running this place. We have great music DJs and incredible artists who are in the studio right now building real radio shows that are going to blow your mind. And the only place that can pull off an imaginative idea as big as this, Apple.
Well, joining me now is the controller of Radio 1, Ben Cooper. And Ben, you just heard him say they've got great DJs, they've got great talent, great producers. Many of whom have been nicked from your office. How do you feel about that?
I wonder where they got the idea from. Yeah, I wonder. It's great. I love Zane, and I think this is good news for the radio industry. I think, you know, what Apple have done is they've sat in California and they've decided to actually open a radio station. Well, that's brilliant for the industry because I believe competition is great. And it means that we have to innovate quicker and faster and come up with more creative ideas than they can.
I mean, is it easy to say that in a way from the point of view of the BBC because you've got a guaranteed income to make your radio station? If you were running a commercial station, would you feel the same way that Apple was treading on your toes?
I think what Apple have done is they've looked at actually the Radio 1 model in the UK in terms of breaking new British music and said we want that for the other 99 territories around the world. If you're commercial radio, you play hit music. Well, the DJs that Zane has hired in are not playing pop music. They're playing very much new music. They're playing specialist music. And I suppose my question to Zane would be, so, okay, can you break British acts like Radio 1's done with Florence and the Machine and Royal Blood and Jake Bugg and Soak and now Slaves?
And I suppose the answer to that possibly is yes, because they'll have this big platform. You know, it's going to be irresistible, isn't it, for a record label not to have their artist debut on Apple Radio Beats One, potentially, rather than Radio One under certain circumstances. But also no, perhaps, in terms of the brand. I mean, do you think the audience understand what Beats is? They understand what Beats headphones are. But actually, it seemed to me Beats was a hip-hop brand, and now they're saying, you know, this is all about possibly guitar music, possibly indie music as well.
I think the other question I would ask Zane then is about that, is about how do you, you've got great marketing, Apple are brilliant at marketing, they've got great brands, and they have got an awful lot of money to spend on that marketing to persuade us to get excited about it. But have they got the ability to actually get that authenticity and sense of community to all 100 territories? For me, that sounds really quite complicated and quite a difficult task. How do you excite someone in Russia the same as you do in South Korea as you do in South Africa? That, to me, sounds really quite a difficult task. And so what is it that's going to bind that community of Beats One listeners together into that sense of excitement about a zeitgeist? What is that zeitgeist? What is that community?
I mean, I'm sensing a slight kind of breath of relief, really, from the radio industry that actually all they announced at the end of the day was, you know, seemingly impressive for a press release, but really, a couple of DJs, some producers, one station for all over the world. But in the future, they've called it Beats One. I mean, the ambition's quite clear, isn't it? We're going to get Beats 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe local versions as well. Do you think it's too easy to dismiss Apple as a player in this market?
Yeah, you can't dismiss Apple as a player in this market. You've got to sit up and take notice. And I think for me, the real question that the traditional radio industry has to answer is two questions about Ds, distribution and data. Apple, as we know, have got huge distribution to 100 territories with everyone, not only with an Apple phone, but any other smartphone, we believe, later on in the year. And also the other thing for the traditional radio industry to to worry about is about return paths of data. If you're a traditional radio station, you put out your radio content to people, but you don't get any return path data, whereas Apple will. And that, I think, is a real wake-up call for the traditional radio industry.
Alex and Seppo are still here. Alex?
Yeah, I just... I mean, Apple is perhaps the most emblematic example of Silicon Valley control freakery. How do you think they're going to deal with running a youth-oriented radio station?
Good question. I think from what I gather, Zane has been given a sort of, you know, you get on with it, you're the expert. And I think that will be... something that he'll enjoy to begin with, but I'm sure Apple as a company will want to see results. And I think it's all very well if you play and you rebel as long as you get results. And for me, that's another question, if I was running it, is what does success look like? Traditionally, radio has been about how many listeners you get. This is surely about how many subscribers you can get from listeners into that walled market of $9.99 a month. So it'd be very interesting to see what success looks like for Zane and his friends.
And what does success look like for Radio 1 on that score? Because you say that, you know, success is about how many listeners you get. By most metrics that are traditionally used by the industry, your listenership is going down. And yet you very proudly say, but look, we're doing all this stuff online. Where's the evidence that your YouTube views translate into Radio 1 listeners?
Well, first of all, why do they have to translate into Radio 1 listeners? It might be that you actually... have to have a more complex view of what you do from a traditional point of view. So, for example, it would be foolish of a publisher to just look at sales in a bookshop in a high street. You'd have to look at your Amazon sales as well. And an artist today, or a band, it would be foolish if they just looked at CD sales. They'd have to look at how they were doing with, you know, downloads and how they were doing streaming, how they were doing in gig tickets, etc.
It must be tricky, though, with some of those features. I mean, I was thinking about Innuendo Bingo in particular. If listeners haven't seen this, it's a feature on the Scott Mills Show where they get a celebrity to take a lot of water and then spit it out when someone says something that sounds a bit like a cock. And, you know, that's something that works very well on video. It's a really weird listen. I mean, I've sat listening to the radio when it's on, and it's quite, unless you've seen the video, it's not quite obvious what's happening. Do you sometimes think, well, we're prioritising this online experience over the sound of the radio station?
It's a question that I think you have to be aware of. I think, though, an innuendo is an innuendo, and that's been going since Sid James and well before.
Beats innuendo is coming soon.
Maybe that's... Oh, damn. See, look, quick, copyright it now. So I think you have got to try and always make sure that what goes into the microphone is the train that pulls the carriages. That is the most important thing, but... In this day and age, there are not going to be young people bumping into you on a radio dial. You have to make sure they bump into you in a different way. And when we knew that we were losing hours, we were still reaching a lot of people, but we were losing hours consumed during the week. We did our research and said, where is that being lost to? And it was YouTube. And so we made sure that people could bump into our brand, Radio 1, on YouTube.
And Seppo, the evidence is, though, that younger people in particular are spending less time listening to the radio, more time with their, since we're talking about Apple this episode, Apple handsets. Do you think, in the mind of the demographic that Ben's chasing, do you think the BBC or Apple is a more pertinent brand?
I think you're probably more likely to have come across the BBC if you're younger on, like, traditional formats, like television and radio. So it's always going to kind of be a part of like your upbringing, your childhood, weekends, whatever it might be, hanging out with your parents. So even if it's not in a device that you carry around with you, now that it's online and now that it's just embedded in British culture, you're probably just aware of it. I think Apple are going to be able to harness the power of their brand on top of these like very trendy names. People like, I mean, the DJ Ebro from New York's Hot 97 radio station, who is relatively unknown outside of America, but will be really good at getting that American kind of East Coast hip-hop market. Julia Adenuga, who's from Rinse FM over here in the UK, who's going to be doing Beats One stuff, again, has a really small but really dedicated following. So I think they're just going to be able to make the most of having these three DJs on these stations who bring a niche kind of taste and like a certain kind of coolness, which young people are going to obviously want to be a part of, to like this huge audience that will just have these devices. So I think BBC has the traditional kind of mindset of being just a part of your life already, but then Apple has become a part of your life by you owning the devices. So that's kind of how they have to duke it out, in a sense.
And Ben, it strikes me that Twitter has become the social network that gets mentioned on air. There was some prickliness originally about mentioning them as a brand, but now people just say, tweet me at this, because people understand what that means. If Apple Music succeeds and it becomes the way that young people find music, then you're going to have to start talking about it on your station, aren't you? You're going to have to start saying you can find them on Apple Music at this and that. And actually, they're a rival now as well as a supplementary provision of music.
Well, I don't see them necessarily as a rival. I think, you know, Radio 1 has a good tradition of working with tech companies, whether that be with Facebook or Twitter or YouTube. And as long as it's a kind of, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, and it's a kind of, as long as there's the right attribution flowing both ways, I don't see why you can't have a partnership in the future. So, you know, it might be absolutely right that we do some work with Apple in not so distant future. So, you know, I don't see this thing of a sort of walled garden of going, we just need to be inside here and we can't talk about anyone outside in the outside world. That's ridiculous in this day and age. Also, an interesting fact for you is that actually, although we, I think, are something like the second biggest radio station on Twitter in the world, something like that. I think NRJ in France, the number one. Actually, half our audience never have used Twitter. So we have to continually check ourselves in terms of what social media is relevant for young audience, and so do we actually need to be doing something on Tumblr, or do we need to be doing something on Snapchat, or what's the next thing? Is it Vine? And seeing where that energy and that sort of vibe is that we need to make sure that we continue to connect with.
If only I had an excuse to use Snapchat at work. Ben Cooper, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for taking the time. Cheers. Well, that's it for this week. Big thanks to all of my guests today, Johnny Brocklehurst and Ben Cooper, and of course, the panel, Seppo, Alex and Stuart. I've been Ollie Mann. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Ollie with a Y, M-A-N-N. The producer has been Alana Chance. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.